today.
Oh, yeah, your first Solstice Games. Wow. I remember my first time. I was 23, and I had just found out I was allergic to cashews.
Cool. I don't think that I should participate.
Don't worry about it. It's not about who wins and loses, you know? It's just about team building. There's no I in Solstice.
But there's...
Well, yes, there is. Yes. I've actually been trying to get them to change it to a Y for a long time.
TBTL!
We are addicted to podcasts.
It's crazy, but we listen to them when we're doing the dishes.
Don't tell people that, Chris. It's so random.
What did you think about the ride?
It was great. And apparently, I've never been on live television before, but apparently sometimes I don't watch the news. Because I'm a kid, and apparently every time, Grandpa just gives me the remote after we watch the Powerball.
The story of this situation is extremely personal.
We are not ramping down. We're just getting started. Nothing stops this train. Nothing.
Where the heck? Like the dog has something better to be doing on a Monday afternoon than listening to TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Well, I guess this is the part where the art gets made.
Sitting in here in the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, all ready to do the show, and I turn around, and the pod dog is not here to supervise the program. But I'm going to have to just soldier on all by my lonesome. By the way, my name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Coming to you, as mentioned, from the BSBC, the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center. Why haven't we ever called it the BSBC anymore? I think that's going to be the new cool nickname of the Broadcast Center. Perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. This is a weird Monday for no good reason. I say weird because, like, I got a ton of sleep last night, as is my new thing. I went to bed early, got some decent sleep, feeling rested, refreshed. Everything is coming up Milhouse today, and yet right as I turn on the microphone to start talking to you here on episode 2729 in a collector series, just a wave of odd behaviors and thoughts, intrusive thoughts, honestly, come into my brain. So I guess we'll just try to get through this thing together. We do have a good show in store for you.
Let the fun begin.
Including a crazy story out of England, where in the middle of the night, residents were hearing the haunting voice of children singing a scary song. And they actually called the police after hearing this for months, and the police investigated and figured out what was going on.
I am petrified, petrified with this story.
It was the sound of children singing, "It's raining, it's pouring, the old man is snoring," in the middle of the night. And the real explanation of what was going on with this is only mildly less upsetting than the general circumstances surrounding the story. So we'll get into that. Plus, Matthew McConaughey claimed on Jimmy Fallon's show that he had to throw his child 15 feet in the air at the Grand Canyon to his wife so that she could escape and the child could escape an oncoming ram, like a wild animal in the Grand Canyon.
I think this guy's sense of humor never developed past junior high school.
You know, that was not the audio drop for Matthew McConaughey's story. This was.
When you got God, you got a friend, and that friend is you.
But we will talk about that story and try to figure out if there's any universe in which that could have actually happened. We'll talk about that, plus emails and V-mails. And this guy, the longest running Cobra of the show, he bought a hot air balloon, but it doesn't mean he thinks he's better than anyone else. Don't stay in his house if you're dark-sided. He's Andrew.
Oh, explicit.
Walsh.
Ooh.
And he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hi, buddy.
Hey, man. So many things I want to say. First of all, when you said you played the wrong drop after the McConaughey story, I actually thought, like, that's an interesting, almost brilliantly interesting drop that you played there. That, like, the joke was that you thought that he was throwing his kid because it was a sense of humor, or almost like it.
I think this guy's sense of humor never developed past junior high school.
I mean, by the way, very possible with McConaughey.
I mean, like, sometimes
that could accurately describe him.
Yeah, I would have let that one lie. You actually earned more respect from me when you had chosen that one.
You have a long documented history of liking what I would consider to be slightly more challenging art.
Outsider art, if that was
the magic Christian of drops,
right?
That would explain why it worked for you, and explain why it horrified me. Also, I was looking, so I just have this whole collection of audio drops in my iTunes, and I was looking at the Matthew McConaughey drop.
When you got God, you got a friend, and that friend is you.
But I was the cursor on my computer was resting on the wrong drop, so when I played the wrong thing, it shocked. It was like when I thought I was biting into a strawberry, but it was an onion.
Yeah, right.
Like I was, my senses were thrown off because I was expecting one outcome and a very different outcome happened, and I had no choice but to comment on it. But I don't know. Like I have no good reason why I'm feeling discombobulated today.
Tell me about intrusive thoughts. Talk about that.
Well, not anything, not anything overly specific or intense. Just more like when I turn on the microphone and start. Well, you know what? Fine. Let's do this. Intrude away thoughts. I was at this event over the weekend for the Seattle Symphony, and it was at the Sheraton downtown. It was a very fun night. First, Carrie and I and Carrie's friend Chelsea went and saw the Seattle Symphony perform at Benaroya Hall, which was great. Then we went to this kind of big event that's a fundraiser for the symphony, and I needed to go up. And at the beginning of this whole event, I was to stand on stage and kind of talk a little bit about the importance of symphonic music, which is not something I have a hugely strong. It's not something I have a really strong kind of background in. I'll be honest with you. I probably have maybe one or two anecdotes about classical music, mostly because of me growing up with my friend Peter, who is and remains a cellist, a really excellent cellist. But what I realized was, I used those two anecdotes last year when I hosted this event. Mm. I'm out of classical music related anecdotes. And do you want to get that?
No, sorry. I had it on because I was expecting some calls earlier. Oh, this is Scam Likely.
Carol, hold my calls.
Sorry, Mr. Likely. I'll deal with you later.
Oh, it tells you who it thinks it is?
It says Scam Likely. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Got it. Sometimes when I send an email or a text message, my computer will guess at who it thinks I'm. It says maybe this is Andrew.
Oh,
which is like a weirdly not certain thing from a computer. I feel like it should either tell you who you're sending it to, or it should just not.
Yeah, I agree. Going,
you know, my best guess right now is it might be Andrew.
Yeah.
So anyway, I realized that I had used my one or two classical music related anecdotes yesterday, or rather last year at this event, and so. The time for me to walk on stage is now rapidly approaching, and now it's here. And I just – they say, ladies and gentlemen, from NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Luke Burbank. I tell them to say that for the intro because I feel like this is the one thing – maybe they'll think that I'm Bill Curtis or something. It's a thing that in a room full of classical music fans, there is at least a remote chance they've heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So I walk up on stage, and as I got on stage, I realized I am going to, for maybe the first time in a long time, I am going to 100% wing this. Like, I am just going to go up here, and I'm going to kind of look out into the crowd. I mean, there was like two or three things I had to say. I had to welcome everyone to the event. I had to make a quick announcement or two about people who are being honored. And then after that, it was just like, I don't know, do something for 5 minutes. And I stood on that stage, which was also oddly arranged. It was in the middle of this ballroom. So, like, you're surrounded by the people at the dinner. So, luckily, I had a – now I'm really taking this to the least interesting part of the story. But I had a handheld microphone, which I insist upon. That's, like, the one show-busy thing that I do. If I'm ever doing some sort of event – I'm like this. They always want to put a lavalier mic on me. They tried to do this at the PRPD in Austin, and I was like, nah, look at my rider. says, I have to have a handheld microphone. I don't know why. I just feel more comfortable holding onto a microphone. It's probably to create a little bit of barrier between me and the audience.
Sure. That makes 100% sense.
I hate lavalier microphones.
Because then what do you do? Lavalier or, you know, if you have a lav or one of those headset ones, next thing you know, you're in a goddamn TED Talk. What do you do with your hands? I need a mug. I need another mug. Then you're up there holding exactly. two mugs.
Yeah. No, that's like that's my worst nightmare. Actually, there's a third element.
You ain't no rapper. You more like a TED Talk set to music.
The worst miking situations are lavalier that is on you, but that is only working intermittently because you can't do anything to fix it, and you're talking. You're supposed to be talking like I'm not even holding a microphone, but it's a lot of faith in that lavalier.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, also called a lapel mic for people that don't know what I'm talking about. It's just like the little microphone they clip to your jacket or whatever. That one sucks. What also really sucks is impossibly small wand microphone that is locked to the lectern that is like really far away from your mouth. So you're supposed to stand like your normal posture and talk. And then the audio engineer is supposed to, I guess, turn the microphone up on that little narrow wand-like microphone that's mounted on the podium. But I always feel like I need it to be louder than they think it needs to be because I'm trying to get everyone's attention. Usually people are like drinking wine and enjoying themselves. And so I'm leaning down closer to this stationary microphone as they're also turning the volume up. Next thing you know, I'm just bent down over a Lucite podium yelling into a microphone that's 100% blown out. Also a bad outcome.
I could hear the squeak of the feedback. Right? Like, everybody, I hope you're enjoying your rice peel off. Also, you are
back.
Somebody.
Yeah, that's too quiet.
I was going to say, but also, I mean, that is something that it's very much a result of you working in radio. I mean, I know this about you. Like when we do live shows, like you are really. If you go back and you listen to the tape, and I'm trying to get better at it, but certainly. The first few live shows I did with you, it's really embarrassing because you are, as they say, eating that microphone. You sound good. You sound present. Like you're in control of the microphone and you know where it needs to be. Whereas when I'm up there, it felt like I was yelling. It felt like I was right into the mic, but I wasn't compared to you. And like you are very familiar because your number one thing is radio and not television, although obviously you do television too. I think that mic placement is just like it's so ingrained in you. And so kind of having one of those things – giving up that control to somebody else or just having this mic on your lapel, I completely understand that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's some kind of special technique.
You know, you got to eat that microphone.
Or it's just something that's evolved over the many years of doing this, you're right. But it's just I am always holding the microphone almost touching my mouth, which is pretty gross, honestly, because I don't bring my own microphone to places. But anyway, I stroll up onto the stage, and I was really glad I had a handheld microphone because they had the podium set up, the lectern, with a microphone that was, if you will, kind of attached to that. And everybody who was talking into that microphone had to have their back to half of the audience. Like, it was – so I was able to just kind of like – I was able to roam the stage and try to keep semi-engaged with everybody. But my point is – back to intrusive thoughts. I went up there and you would think for the number of times that I have gone onto a stage somewhere to talk into a microphone at this point, you would think that this would be a really common occurrence that I would just kind of get up there and just figure it out as I was going along. It's not because I get really anxious even many years into this. I have an anxiety dream about I'm at a stand-up comedy club and I don't know that I'm supposed to perform and then they're about to call my name and I'm running around the club trying to find a pencil so I can write myself some bullet points. So
can I ask
really,
you a question? Can I interrupt?
Please.
Because I don't know if the listeners, because this show in particular is so laid back, if the listeners are surprised to hear that you went up there unprepared, but I am because I know that you work your ass off on these things. So I would assume that while you usually have a good balance of knowing what you're going to say but leaving enough room for looseness and you know being able to adapt to the room, why in this case did you not think it out ahead of time? Why did you not think, oh, my only two anecdotes were already used last year. What am I going to say when I get up there?
I think it's because on Thursday night – sorry, this story keeps backtracking now. We did Livewire in Portland. It was the season premiere. It was a great show. It was really fun. I thought that the guests were awesome. The crowd seemed to really be enjoying it. And I remember being like not super anxious going into the show. I do a little spiel before the show starts, kind of warm the crowd up, and I talk to them. And I honestly didn't really know what I was going to talk about. I decided as I was walking on stage, I would just make a joke about the fact that Mark Wahlberg's schedule defenders had descended upon my Twitter feed, which is true because I made some dumb joke about his weird schedule that he keeps. Supposedly,
oh, yeah,
he supposedly gets up
that.
At 2:30 in the morning,
yeah,
and he's like works out like two times. He plays golf for a half hour, and then he's like he's in bed at 7:30. And my take on that was, you could pretty much do this same day and just start it at 6:30 in the morning,
yeah,
and go to bed at 11:30,
right?
Like, with a few minor adjustments. It's like there was nothing really specific, or there's nothing necessary about it being 2:30 to 7:30. I just feel like he's living out of step with the rest of humanity for no good reason. So as I'm walking on stage at LiveWire, I thought, yeah, I'll just riff on that. And this particular night, the crowd seemed receptive. So then that made me – people seemed to be enjoying that, and then the show went great. And I left that stage feeling an unusual feeling, less shame, also known as more confidence. And so then Saturday came around, and I was like – I most of what I was going to say was prepared remarks or some version of them. So I wasn't really nervous about that part because I had a script with me on stage. I could just read who sponsored the centerpieces or whatever. But the talking about the kind of importance of the Seattle Symphony in our sort of cultural life in Seattle, I just somehow felt like, you know, this is important and I really like this. And I went to the performance that preceded it and I thought, I'll say something that's probably going to be fine because that's what I do for my job most of the time. And like, I know it's insane because, again, you would think that at this point that would be my default setting, which my default setting would be, you know, I do this for a job. It'll probably be okay. But that is not my default setting. My first thought is, you are going to fail so hard when you do this. Like, you are going to embarrass yourself up there. And people are going to be horrified. And then every one of your jobs is going to be politely taken away from you. Like, every time I get in front of people, not this show, not you and I sitting here. This, honestly, I feel comfortable. You're my friend. I like talking to you. This is a stress-free zone for me doing TBTL. But anything more performative than this, including things that I have done a lot in my life, every single time I go to do it, historically, it feels like the sort of my inner monologue is, this is the one you're going to really F up. Hence me really trying to be prepared to stave that off. But there was something about Thursday night working out okay. And then Saturday, I was like, I just had an unusual calm. I was like, I know how to do this. And I got up there and I started talking. And I don't think that's going to like win a Peabody or a MacArthur. But I just talked about how, you know, I just found it quite amazing that these musicians, these folks that are in the Seattle Symphony were able to just like play such incredible music in such amazing time, even though they come from different places and have you know, all kinds of different backstories, and that this is kind of like a minor miracle, and I think it's artistically something amazing, and it's something we could think about in this country. People being different but kind of working together. Now, you could say that's sort of Pollyanna-ish, which it is, but I don't know. I was just talking. Like, I would talk to you or something, probably after 9 drinks at Teddy's, and then I got done, and then I just said, all right, well, let's welcome the co-chairs of the event, and then I welcomed them up, and then they came on stage. And they were like, oh, well put. Thanks, Luke. And then they did their thing. And it was just like, fine. Everything was okay. And it was – this is like a very small moment, and I can't believe I've even belabored it this long. But it was kind of a big deal for me because it was like – and who knows? Maybe I'll be in a different mood the next time I have to do something on stage where I'll be completely racked with self-doubt again. And part of it, by the way, part of the – what feeds the self-doubt is this feeling also that if I ever actually feel confident about what I'm doing, then that's when I'm going to really F up.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I tell myself, oh, being nervous before stuff is what keeps me sharp. And I mean there's probably a level of phoning it in that's not good. But I also think feeling like what's that possibly apocryphal story that I always cited or miscited on the show? It's like the – centurion with like a rabbit under his armor.
Oh, right.
Like disemboweling him as he's standing at attention. I mean, whatever anxiety is sort of like hollowing me out from the inside all the time about this stuff, it's probably not doing me a super ton of good. Like, there's probably a happy medium. And so anyway, Saturday was a really good night for me because I somehow put that aside a little bit, and it and everything was fine, you know. So all that to say,
so your intrusive thought was a good thought. It was like, yay, Luke, I can just relax.
Well, on Saturday night, it was more just like, I think this is going to be okay, which, again, is not something I ever think. And then sitting here at the beginning of doing our show today, I'm just like, I will oftentimes at the beginning of this show, haphazard as it sounds, I will have a kind of pretty clear plan in mind about what I'm going to, like, what my, generally speaking, what topics I might discuss if I note the weather or if the dog has done something mildly interesting or whatever. At the top of the show, I'll have kind of a little wrap in my mind that I'm thinking, I'll probably talk about this. But because I'm on this natural high of thinking things might go okay, I'm just sort of talking. I'm looking around the yard. I'm having all these thoughts are beaming in like, that dog poop in the backyard does not look the size of Rudy's. Did another dog sneak into the yard? Is that from a raccoon? Also, I'm noticing that there are parts of the grass that are growing back really green and parts that aren't. Is that an area that doesn't get proper water? And could I get a Whatcom hardscaping in here to do some kind of a paver? How much does that cost? Can I do that myself? Like, how hard is it really to dig out a piece of grass and put pavers in? And do you have to these are all the thoughts that are running in the back of my head as I'm doing my spiel at the top of the show, because I'm just apparently opening my mind up to the universe now.
First of all, Luke Burbank, poop detective, I would tune in for that. Like you out there, hands and knees with like a protractor and a ruler and
yeah.
I don't like probably I like a pin with a string and you're looking at trajectory.
Definitely
like, I
some
like
strings all, involved.
I like that. I think you can go with that for tomorrow's opening if you want to. I'd love a update on that. You know, we've talked about you for a while here and you know how uncomfortable I am with that. So let's turn this on me.
Let's move on.
I am thinking about your other kind of fear that you've talked about on the show, which leads to your inability to say no to gigs. And I don't know to what degree that is still kind of something that you think about or struggle with. But, you know, you always were worried that, you know, if I say no to this one emceeing gig or auctioning gig or whatever gig that maybe I don't even want to do that much. But if I say no, you know, it'll dry up. They'll find somebody else.
Yeah.
And then that person will do it. And then it's just easy to call that person again next year. And then where's Luke Burbank auctioneer or whatever? Well, I will tell you that your fears
where's
on
Luke
that are
Burbank poop/auctioneer detective.
Poop did a scoop doop. I will say that this weekend I had a realization that like, oh shit, yeah, that's true. Like I only had one outside gig and that was Cairo Radio. And I think I told you, I'm pretty sure we talked about it on the air, maybe just off the air. But, you know, they'll ask me to fill in as a co-host from time to time still, which is I love because, you know, I don't want to work full time there. It's quite a grind. But I like having the opportunity to go in and be on the radio every now and then. But I made a mistake of accepting a 2-day gig. It was dependent about whether or not they gave this person vacation if I could fill in. They asked me. I said, yes, I'm having oral surgery, but I should be fine by then. Don't worry about it. And if you recall, my recovery this time took much longer than it had last time, and I had to back out of those two. And that was the only time I had accepted a gig from them and then had to apologize and say, I actually can't do it. And it was a new person who's over there who's doing the booking now. It's not my buddy. And so I realized I was hanging out with my friend Aaron, who, you know, Aaron Mason, who works there. And he was mentioning how, you know, he's been filling in a lot. And I'm like, of course, they turned to him. When I backed out, they turned to him, which is a great opportunity for him, by the way, and he loves it and he's good at it. So I actually hold no grudge at all. I'm really glad he's getting the opportunity, and I mean that sincerely. But I was doing the math, and I said this to him. We're giving him a ride somewhere this week, and I did the math. I'm like, that's right. Ever since I backed out of those two gigs, they don't need me anymore because they have you there. I may never be on Cairo Radio again because I said no to a gig or I backed out of a gig. So, Luke, I want you to keep on accepting every single auctioneering thing that comes your way.
So the message is trust your fears.
Trust your fears. Exactly.
Well, I don't know what to say to that exactly because maybe it is true. I mean, maybe that dried up for you, or maybe it hasn't long term. Who knows? I don't have any.
Eventually, they'll need somebody. Probably. I'm not telling that story like, oh,
and
poor
that's
me.
When I slide in.
And I, honestly,
how would you feel if I was like, hey, Andrew, we need to record early on Thursday because I'm co-hosting Ron and Don?
Well, you used to, that it was a thing. Like, I mean, it's funny, like, you used to do that a lot, and you were the first person they would turn to. And then I think as you, as your schedule got busier and busier, they would turn to me. And this is the truth. Like, I am telling you exactly to what degree this really bothers me, which is
right
a little. Like, you know, because I really like doing it from time to time, but I'm being unusually, because I know I'm usually, like, so bitter, like, my friends are all better than me. In this case, I really am glad for Aaron. Like, it's a really great opportunity, and I'm kind of like, oh, that's good, and he's, like, a legit friend of mine. So I don't have my usual, like, I'm not racked with insecurity. It's not keeping me up at night. If I never get to do it again, hey, I never expected to do it forever. It's a fun thing to do. But I also think that, like, listen, holidays are going to roll around. Like, eventually something will go through that radio station where everybody is sick or on vacation, and they'll just they'll go to the bottom of the barrel, and there I'll be just waiting.
Eventually, they'll all use that salad bar that I've poisoned like a supporter of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
Oh, right. You're right. Out of context, what I just said made it sound like I was saying a hard rain is going to come and wash all the scum. That was not a threat to Cairo Radio. I just mean eventually they're going to need someone.
All right, we should take a break. We are overdue for that. But when we come back, we got top stories, including this crazy thing that happened in Ipswich, England. Children singing songs in the middle of the night. Somebody recorded the actual song. I have the audio of the song, and it is going to friggin' chill you to your core. So we'll talk about that. Plus we've got a bunch of other stuff. So don't go anywhere. It's TBTL. Back in a moment. Check this out.
I just came by to get my things. Yo, give me back those moonlit walks, the pillow talk, the candlelight, the random fights, the I'll be home soon tonight. Give me back those dead flowers, cold showers, Monday nights, 2-for-1 dinners, the leftovers. Give me back my neglected plans, broken promises, all those little lies that hid behind the honesty.
I like this. Who is this? Oh, God, I love him so much, and he's so ephemeral, is that the right word? It's Cool Calm Pete, and he's rapping over a Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings song. And, like, he is, I believe, a Korean-American rapper who maybe released one album and
I remember
mixtape
there. Like, there was some other song you played at some point, and I was like, this is awesome. Who is it? And I remember you mentioning Cool Calm Pete.
His sound is just so, like, this is just.
You'll give me back my hand, you greedy witch. Yo, good luck.
It's just like that tone, that laid-back tone is just like the most, I don't know, relaxed hip-hop
Man.
Vibe you can get.
That what album is that off of?
This one, I think, was just something that he released maybe as a mix, because that's really a Sharon Jones song he was talking over. Mm-hmm. But his album is Lost. It's just called Lost, the album.
I have a band that I want to go out with. If that's cool, a song. Of course, I hung out with my daughter in Portland on Thursday night after Livewire, which of course means I heard about new music that I like. I mean, I don't want her to think I'm using our relationship to find out about new bands.
You don't want her to think that.
No, and that's why I try to keep that mostly to myself between you, me, and the tens of listeners.
Mm-hmm.
But she turned me on to this band called Bonnie Doon. That is so good. So good. Anyway, so maybe we can go out with a song by Bonnie Doon on the subject, I don't know, just of music that may have been on or off the listener's radar. Should we? I guess it would be weird to do the Donors of the Day over Cool Calm Pete. That'd probably be a little like talking with me talking, maybe a little complicated. Why don't we? Well, that's fine because I've got the exact Bossa Nova instrumental off of Luke Burbank's Mellow Hold music that he got off of YouTube.
Would you consider thanking these donors over this music, but in the style of Cool Calm Pete? That's a big ask.
I'm gonna blow the whistle on that one. See, okay, listen. I love this sound machine. I love my brother DFTB for giving it to me. But this whistle is mislabeled. If you look on this little red plastic thing I'm holding that has all these sound effects, it's got a picture of like a coach's whistle.
Oh.
If you saw a picture of a coach's whistle and then a button, you would think it was going to be like a let's start the game, you know, coach's whistle. This needs to have a picture of some lips, like someone's whistling.
Now, the one, I was thinking the same exact thing, a pair of pursed lips. But then you might think it's going to be a smoochy sound.
Even so, if you had the, if you had air, if you were demonstrating air was coming out of lips, like whistling
sure,
lips.
Sure.
I feel it, because I hit this thinking I was kind of like, I was blowing the whistle on this whole thing. But now I've just, I'm hitting on this whole thing from across the street, and this thing doesn't like it.
Really? This thing is actually into it.
I think I'm being flattering, but I'm not. There's another sound effect on here that just tells the person, you'd look prettier if you smiled.
And that's a picture of a parakeet for some reason.
Yeah, right. Anyway, let's thank the donors of the day. These are the folks making today's episode possible because they donated during this year's TBTL-a-thon. And those donations and those recurring donations are how we are able to do TBTL 5 days a week. Benjamin Quick of Marysville, Washington. Didn't we have a Marysville donor when I was in the bathroom, when I was in the Burger King bathroom?
Oh, Friday? I don't recall.
I believe I said Marysville was the gateway to Tulalip.
Yes, we did have Marysville, yeah.
We also have Alice Weimers and Gabe Keir.
Oh, wait.
Davidson. Oh, are these? Oh, you know what? These are the folks that you read. I was. Yes, this makes sense. Well, you're welcome, everyone.
I got them
here. Free thanks. Just throwing out free thanks left and right.
Do you have them? I do.
I have them now. Yeah. You know what? I'd forgotten. I was in such a fugue state during that part of Friday's show that I had forgotten that you, in fact, did read the donors of the day. Which was good looking out. So let's today thank Valerie Nuskim of Glen Falls, New York.
Okay, you're going to want to do the ones before that, actually. We're all over the place here. I already marked these as 917. You're looking at the script. You're in the same script I am right now. And I, as you start reading them, I start marking them. This is really good. This is amazing radio. So if you'll look, the ones that are marked 917 would be
good
for today.
Got it. I see them. You know, sorry, Valerie, you got your thanks.
you're just going to get thanked tomorrow? Yeah, no, Valerie's in the catbird
You're no
seat.
Benjamin Quick or Alice Weimers or Gabe Keir.
We're just giving these thanks away.
How about a Catherine O'Connell from Chicago, Illinois? How's that?
That's right there. That's
the right name? How about a Greg DeVore? What can I do to interest you in a Greg DeVore of Woodinville, Washington?
What's going to take to get you into a Greg DeVore today?
You know, the kind of Amy Ford Wagner of Kailua, Hawaii, that you have donated to your show says a lot about you. How about Jennifer Saunders of Fullerton, California?
You know, the one thing I hear about Jennifer Saunders, though, they lose a lot of their retail value the moment you drive them off the lot. That's one thing you got to remember about
Jennifer
Saunders.
See, the reason I described Amy Ford Wagner's was because I was trying to exactly avoid a reference to driving and or riding donors.
Sorry, everybody.
Hey, that's all right. How about, let's see here, last but definitely not least, Amy Heath of Dallas, Texas. It took us a while, but we got there, Amy, Jennifer, other Amy, Greg, and Catherine. Thank you all for donating to TBTL. Thank you for putting up with us. I feel like this Donors of the Day segment has perfectly typified what's right and wrong with TBTL. And the fact that you all are still listening and maybe in some small way feeling thanked and honored by that, that proves you're a special kind of individual, the kind of person who gets TBTL. And specifically today, the kind of person, if I just read your name, if you're one of the 30 to 40 people I just read your name, you are instrumental in making this episode of the show happen. So thank you so much. We could not be here without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story takes us to Ipswich, England. where a woman by the name of, let's see here. Actually, you know what? I don't think they even identify the woman by name. A tormented mother is how she's described, living on Bramford Road with her two young children, had been waking on an almost nightly basis to the haunting sound of children singing, "It's raining, it's pouring." She reported it to the police. The police eventually started to take her seriously, came out to where she was. I'm trying to find, of course, this is the one time, Andrew, that I don't preload the audio. Or if actually I'm being honest with you, I recorded the audio but on a different computer of this actual sound. When the police came out, apparently, they sort of hung out at her house and they looked around and they heard the music and they recorded it. One of them did like on their phone or something, and then they followed it to figure out what was going on. I really, really want you to hear this actual sound because it's as scary as you might imagine. So pardon me while I kind of poke around. What I'm also trying to avoid is playing you like a weird YouTube video where someone's just talking about the scary sound, because that is also what happens a lot. And thanks a lot.
Or did you ever you look for that, do you ever have that thing where you're looking for audio for a news story and then you finally find it and then you hit play on it and it's like somebody who's just taken the New York Times version of that story or the AP and they have a robot reading it?
Today, yes, and it has 8 million
England,
views.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is why are we slaving over a hot podcast rundown sheet every day? All we need to do is have a computer voice read things about Kim Kardashian. And it will be like, we'll have 40 million and monetize it. And then we'll be rich. Okay, this is, I found it finally. Apologies for the delay. This is actual recording. I'm not shitting you. You're going to hear this and think I'm just messing with you. This is a recording that the police made of this song that's been playing in the middle of the night in Ipswich. Actual audio of the thing that they've been hearing in the middle of the night. Is that not the scariest flipping thing you could hear on the wind at 3 in the morning in Ipswich, England?
Even the word, like the tone, of course, like kids singing in that way. But then even like, oh yeah, he bumped his head on the bed and he couldn't wake up in the morning. It's got it's an ominous, threatening message to be sending out there.
I think we can agree that any kind of like solemn children's music, when played out of context, is truly horrifying. Mm-hmm. Forget your "I'm so random, I'm afraid of clowns." Okay, although maybe you are, maybe you have that condition. One who's listening to the show does have that condition. But the real terror is any kind of nursery rhyme when it's happening out of context. That is genuinely kind of crazy, or I should say upsetting. And what's really interesting to me is that somebody else knew this. Somebody who was in charge of a construction site, like down the road from where this woman lived, because the song was coming from kind of a construction project area where they had sensors set up to try to keep people from stealing the building materials in the middle of the night. And what was set up was if you tripped the motion detector, it started playing that song.
Why?
That is the because would you rob a construction site where those goddamn kids were singing that? Imagine
that's
you
brilliant.
Go out. Isn't that the great? I mean, that you. I could not hightail it out of there fast enough if I was in the middle
of
trying to steal stuff from a construction site, and I hear that song playing through the construction site.
Oh my
I'm
god!
Out.
Yes, that is brilliant.
Isn't that genius?
It really
How
is.
How is that not? I mean, that is like the best security system I have ever heard of.
Well, I guess because if it happens too many times, then you know it's not really haunted.
No, but it's still terrifying.
Yeah, but it's
still
terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, and you know,
like
that
even
other
if you
hear.
Know, even if I told you, I swear to you, even if I told you, Andrew, this is just a recording. It's just going to play on these loudspeakers, and it doesn't mean anything. It's just there to kind of mess with your brain. I promise you would not get far into that pitch black construction site in the middle of the night with that blasting on loudspeakers, because it's already scary to be there. And then even if you know that's the security system, I still think it would be terrifying.
I am not a prankster. I don't like pranks. I think they're dumb. But when you're talking about this, my brain immediately went to how can I somehow get this to like just play in your bedroom at like 3 a.m. Could I get Carrie to do it? Like, I honestly did. I had this split second thing and I was like, well, no, that's stupid. I don't play those games. But how would you like that? How would you like that? Like, you're sleeping tonight and then all of a sudden at 3 a.m. you wake up and you're like, do I hear something? And that's like coming from somewhere inside your room that you can't quite triangulate.
I would not like that at all.
No. Would you be legit mad at me? Like, if somebody did that to you.
I would not be mad, but I would be, it would upset me, I think. Yeah. I mean, like, not permanently. Like, I probably the series of events would be, it would take my groggy brain a minute to figure out what's going on. And it wouldn't be scaring me. Like, I don't believe in the supernatural. Like, I don't think I'm going to open the door and down the hallway is going to be like a doll, like a Victorian child's doll that's come vaguely to life holding a knife with that song playing. Like, I don't believe in that kind of thing. So what would happen is you'd have to play the song really loud because I'm a pretty sound sleeper. And then by the time I woke up, I'd be like, God damn it. I was asleep. That would be
right.
That would be the extent of my reaction to it. Anyway, they figured out that the reason that the haunting child song was playing was because of spiders crawling across the sensors. It wasn't even people breaking into the construction site. There were large spiders that were crawling over the sensors.
That's also problematic, right?
Yeah, that's only slightly less upsetting.
Right. Well, it turns out everything was fine. It was just ghosts accidentally tripping wire.
We thought it was the ghosts of murdered children. It was the ghosts of murdered teenagers.
Yeah. Good news.
Ipswich.
That's a great story.
Isn't that crazy? That just that thing really dazzles. It's really it's just the each turn of the story was almost more interesting to me. But I really did. I really did think that kind of, I don't know if you'd call it psychological warfare or whatever, but that kind of like that idea of saying like, okay, what's really, maybe this just speaks to my, like, I used to work, you know, I used to intern at KUOW back in the day, and sometimes I'd be working late on a project. Sometimes I would just need to print something out. Every once in a while, maybe I was just, let's just say, taking home some books from the free pile that I was later going to sell. If I was ever in that radio station, this is back in the olden days when it was on the UW campus, and it was the middle of the night, they would often have big band music playing. And it's just so The Shining, it's not even funny. You're
right,
in like an
right.
abandoned radio station, which is in a giant old, you know, academic building on the UW campus. Again, you know, not every time, but sometimes I was probably like, had the boss of the radio station walked in and been like, why are you here at 2 a.m? I wouldn't have had a great answer. And so I'm already heightened. I'm already on edge. And then it's an old kind of dank building. And then it's just like, you know, music from The Shining playing. It really, I mean, to this day, it stuck with me as a very kind of nerve-wracking experience.
Now,
I'm surprised that more
as
more companies haven't harnessed the power of this kind of stuff for security purposes.
I'm not saying this to be glib or try to turn a tragedy into a joke or something on our show, but for real, when you were in
the
KUOW,
Josh Gordon trade?
When you were at KUOW and you were hearing that swing music, was this also after the original host of that show kind of famously took her life, or kind of, I guess, tragically took her life, but also in a very kind of high profile way? So that
no, this was well
out.
Before
okay.
that.
Okay.
So it was unrelated to that. Yeah, Cynthia Doyon, who was the host of The Swing Years and Beyond for many years, quite unfortunately took her own life, which was a very sad thing. But this was scary to me long before that happened. It was
right.
just because I had watched The Shining, because again, you know, everything lines up. Like, you watch The Shining, and what's scary if you're me about The Shining is like this big, giant, old hotel and lots of empty space, and then you're hearing this kind of like sounds of a party. Guy Lombardo and his Flying Canadians playing, you know, Auld Lang Syne or whatever. That sound, that kind of music in an empty building late at night feels scary to me. And if I were to show up at a construction site with bad intentions and I started to hear little kids singing, and you really want to up the ante, make it a kind of like a music box that's breaking down.
Yeah, right.
Where the notes are going slightly out of time.
Yeah.
I honestly, I'm not kidding. I couldn't go through with whatever my nefarious plan was.
Scarily singing Ring Around the Rosie.
Yes. What are the scariest children's songs ranked? I think It's Raining, It's Pouring is one. I think Ring Around the Rosie.
Yeah.
Which was famously about the plague, right?
Yeah. Back to you put posy in your pocket, I think, to you'd smell the posies to block out the bad smell, I think. Speaking of KUOW, if this is bad, and if I shouldn't go here, tell me, and I will cut this out. But I don't think I was talking to you. I think I was talking to somebody else. Did I learn recently that you also used to go into KUOW after hours to watch, like, fights? Like, HBO fights with your friends? And a follow-up question, is this also the reason why 10 years later when I worked at KUOW, I couldn't get a key card because they didn't trust fucking anybody anymore?
No. Yes, answer your first question, yes. And to answer your second question, no. One time, Andrew, I don't care who knows. One time back in the day when KUOW had moved to its new fancy digs, where it still is, which are now probably 20 years old. That still feels like new KUOW to me. Me and Camaro Kev and our friend Gibbs, RIP, and Gibbs was young. He was like in his early 20s, as were me and Camaro, and he was sick with cancer. And I didn't really know the extent of it because he just didn't like to talk about it and he didn't want to seem like a downer. And so he was in between treatments and there was a fight that we wanted to watch and none of us had TV. Like nobody had a big flat screen TV back in those days. And I remember knowing that KUOW had a projection TV in the conference room, which was, obviously intended for professional purposes, but being 22 years old and giving zero craps, I was like, oh, you know what we could do on Saturday night? Oh, and I knew they had HBO. Like, so I was like, I think we can get HBO and we could just watch it on this projection screen in the conference room. Like to the left, like when you walk into KUOW, the receptionist desk is on the right, that left. If you look to the left, there's a conference room.
Oh, so, that conference room. Well, I thought we were in the big performance space where they have like all staff meetings downstairs. Okay.
No, this was, so yeah. we get in. I was a staffer in these days too, by the way. Like I was.
Oh, you're not a volunteer or a
student. I was like legit, I was probably producing Rewind or something.
Oh, okay.
Producing the conversation. But I had no sense of professional behavior. And so we got this idea. I remember weird specific moments, probably because Matt eventually passed away. But I remember us being in the Safeway by the UW, and I remember standing in the beer section, and like we're all getting some six packs or something, and we're gonna go watch this fight. And I remember Gibbs saying, "Yeah, I'm not supposed to drink, but hey, whatever." And then he got Boddingtons, and I've always remembered Boddingtons for that reason.
What is Boddingtons?
It's just a kind of beer, I guess.
Oh, I see. I thought he drank and he got something called Boddingtons. Disease.
No, it was just a brand of beer, I guess. But had Matt, had he lived, I don't think I would have even remembered the night. But looking back on it, because he passed away, that might have been the last time I hung out with him, actually.
Oh.
But again, he seemed fine. I remember, I think we ended up having kind of a fun, wild night like one has in their early 20s, or in my case, also / early 40s. So we go into this conference room, and this is where, thank God, Camaro Kev is the master of all things audiovisual.
Yes.
Because, like, if you paid me $1 billion, I couldn't have figured out how to make that shit work.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just like a TV. You walk in, and you're just like, turn on the TV. Alexa, play HBO. Play Bernard Hopkins versus whoever. He somehow figured it out. To this day, I'm amazed that it actually worked. We actually got HBO to play on the projection screen, and we drank beer with Matt Gibbs, and it was a really fun night. So that was a really nice story. Well, kind of. I mean, also not the right place to do it. And as I think about it, there were sports bars up and down the Ave. We could have probably just gone to one of them. Like, I don't think it had to happen there. But yeah, that was a thing that I did, but that was not my, that wasn't like the default. Like that wasn't, oh, there's a big sporting event on, let's head down to KUOW. And as far as people not being able to get key cards, probably in a roundabout way, I did contribute to that, but that was just through like thousands of misdeeds, not just specifically yeah, watching that
fight. And the reason I bring that up in a teasing way, actually, I couldn't remember if you were telling me that off the air, but now that I think about it, I think maybe Camaro Kev told me that yesterday.
Probably, because you guys were hanging out watching the Browns game.
Yeah, and
weeks
I think,
ago.
You know what we're going to try to do here as soon as we're off the air is I'm going to head over to the Eagles because our friend Katie said, can you know, swing by the Eagles? She's the presidente of the Eagles.
Yes.
And she said, you know, we'll watch the Seahawks game. But then yesterday it occurred to me maybe they're just going to have it on the little TVs. I was picturing it on the really big, like they have one of those projector things, right? You can pull down a big screen or maybe it's just on the wall. But like you're saying, like, I don't know how to use that thing. They showed me and Camaro Kev how to use it one time, but like there's a remote control, but it's not aimed at a TV. You got to aim it at this box that's on the floor and that's going to control the thing that's hooked up to the ceiling. And like I have no idea how to do that at all. So I'm sure Camaro Kev will set it up if we're allowed to do that tonight. And I'll bet you we were talking about that yesterday and maybe it came up, but no, that's actually a nice story. And even when he mentioned it to me in passing that you guys, I thought he had said that you guys would watch games. I didn't know it was just one special
I
occasion, but like I could
one
use
thing,
more
but I
of
could,
that.
I think, yeah, probably somewhere in the middle, right? Like,
yeah,
it's I look back on my now that I'm in like kind of middle age, and I don't know, I now that I'm not 22 anymore or whatever, I look back on all of the stuff I did and said and the way that I sort of behaved in work environments, and I am amazed I didn't get fired more. Like, I would never handle – let me put it this way. If I ran into a 22-year-old version of me now and I was like in management, I'd be like, all right, we got to get this kid out of here.
Because
like,
you're just
he's
cocky.
He's really annoying. I don't remember thinking I was cocky or feeling like I was cocky, but I just was always pushing the limits of everything and just kind of like – I was always trying to get to do stuff that was not technically my job description and stuff that I often didn't really know how to do. And I mean – And doing shit like breaking into the radio station and on the weekend to watch a fight in the conference room and drink beer. Like, that's one of those could get you fired.
Right.
Like, if somebody just came in and was like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? I need to report that to someone. Like, and it was just – I was constantly doing stuff like that. And I am very appreciative that all of the adults that were supervising me during my younger years were way nicer than I am as an adult who now sort of to some degree supervises people. Although actually,
you
having said all that,
somebody for that?
No, I think I'd be like, if the person was handling their actual responsibility, like their Monday through Friday job stuff well, and I saw they were like watching the fight on the big screen and having a couple beers, I would honestly have a soft spot for that, I guess, because of my experience. But maybe it's more just like in how I interacted with people. I just didn't have like a ton of deference, which I think I should have had a little bit more. I didn't. I was just like, to me, the hierarchy, and it's not like I'm not trying to convert this into a TED talk about like how to smash through, you know, whatever, because. Like, whatever, as a white straight male, I'm like already on third base with all this shit, right? Like, that's another thing. I think I might have been saying this to you via text or even on the phone during the summer. Maybe I was just thinking it. But, like, I have constructed a narrative in my mind where, like, everything that has worked out for me job wise has been because I, like, earned it and I took chances and I worked hard. But if I had been a woman of color, I would not have any of the jobs I have now, probably, because when I, 22-year-old white male Luke Burbank, was like, you know, back talking to the facilities guy at KUOW or was like pushing my point, all that stuff felt normal because it's like, hey, it's a white guy doing it. That's what white guys do. Like, if that comes from a person of color, it's interpreted differently a lot of times. And it's like, why is this person such a problem? Why is this person always like –
yeah.
And so I was having this major moment this summer where I was having to really re-examine my own sense of kind of like what I did to get where I feel like I am, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just to be like, okay, because of course my major chip on my shoulder is like, oh, I don't come from people who went to college, or I don't come from people – like my parents aren't doctors who were playing public radio in the Volvo I was riding around in. So therefore – me getting into this world of doing this kind of like radio stuff, that represents me really, you know, overcoming the odds. And you know, it might be like 5% unlikely, but all of the shit that I pulled was, I think, it was tolerated a lot more because I'm a completely non-threatening person, because I'm the person, I look like the people who have always been on top. So it seems to make sense when I'm chiming in with my various opinions on things.
That's a good perspective to have, but it also doesn't mean that you necessarily have to take away it from yourself any pride and accomplishment either. I feel like we have these conversations and sometimes it's looked at in a very binary way. I alluded to a tweet conversation that really upset me. This is like several weeks ago, maybe even a month ago. And I'm bringing it up now not to rant, but I will tell you all the details of it. It was a writer for the Seattle Times. I'm blanking on his name. He writes a lot about – he's a great reporter. I'm really mad I can't think of his name. And he, in one of his stories, apparently – I didn't read the original story. He mentioned something like, quote, those lucky enough to live in homes or have homes or something like that. And apparently our friend and colleague Dory Monson – was probably able to turn that into a full segment on his show, kind of busting on, like, people aren't lucky to have homes. People
I'd like to grow
for
a
their
pair
homes
sometime.
There you go. You know, if you're not familiar with Dory Monson, he's a very right-wing radio ranter here in town, and he works for the same station that Luke and I worked for a long time. And not the public station. And Dory was not part of this text chain. But this Seattle Times writer tweeted out, apparently Dory had a whole rant on his show today because I made a comment or because I used the word those lucky enough to have homes or something along the lines of that. And he just tweeted that out. And then another person whom we used to work with, Brandy Cruz, a local reporter now for Fox News, who has a hell of a personal story, who in so many ways really does define bootstrapping. Like the deck was really stacked against her in many ways, but she grew up very poor. She grew up, I believe, her father, she tweeted this, so I'm not talking out of turn. I believe her dad maybe was homeless and really struggled with a lot of stuff. And she worked her ass off, and she is a good reporter, and I have tons of respect
for
her.
She used to sit in her... In the only thing, this is, you know, she's expressed this to me directly, but she said that like the only thing that kind of felt normal and like even an escape from the reality of her life as this kid in a really chaotic childhood were the female news anchors that she would see on TV, and she would watch, you know, whoever it was and like the national news being reported by whomever, but particularly female reporters and female anchors, and she just said, like, that became a thing she sort of really focused on and really guided a lot of her like school decisions and professional decisions. I mean, these people were reaching out through the television to her in this chaotic childhood, which is a kind of an intense thing to think about.
Right. And she deserves a lot of credit for that. And I mean, a lot of credit for that. Also a woman in the workplace, you know, again, not having all of the privileges that guys like you and I get when we walk into a room for the first time. But she just kind of – so this guy, this reporter tweeted this out about Dory's rant or whatever, didn't at Dory, just kind of mentioned it. And then Brandy kind of came in, and this is – she really upset me with her tweet, which was essentially like, yes, luck has nothing to do with it. And she kind of like gave her little story and, you know, as much detail as you can in a tweet about like the deck was stacked against her and she worked for everything. She had to work for everything and luck has nothing to do with it. And then those two just went back and forth for a while. Brandy just taking the straight up like bootstrap is everything and luck has nothing to do with whether or not you're going to make it. And this reporter kind of just saying, yes, but there are other factors involved. And I consider myself lucky to live in my home. It's not because I didn't work for it. Right. And I, you know, that was just that conversation really got in my head, because as much as I respect Brandy, and she is right, and she deserves so much credit for, I mean, she's just a really brilliant person, but her inability to see that, you know, maybe she's lucky because she wasn't born with a disability. Maybe she's lucky because she wasn't born, like a lot of the homeless people that I kind of meet So many of them are homeless. You can trace it back to some sort of a mental issue of some sort, whether it's something they were born with or something that came later in life through brain damage. And can't you at least say, well, I'm lucky enough that I don't, that I wasn't, you know, that I don't struggle with those things so that I can work in a workplace and so that I can own my home. Like so many people that I know, like one thing happened to them. Maybe it was a medical thing, but it affected their brain. And then, you know, next thing you know, they're kind of living in their car because things are just not great right now. And then you're living in your car. And the next thing you know, you've been living in your car for a year. And the next thing you know, like you're just homeless, you know, like luck. And you were talking about privilege, and I've kind of meandered pretty far away from that. But I think that my thesis is you talking about the privilege you get as a white man and the doors that were open for you is a really good thing for guys like you and me to remember and think about a lot. But that doesn't also mean that you, Luke Burbank, don't get credit for any of the stuff you do, because I work with you. We work in the same field, and you are very successful because of the things that you do, and you pushing boundaries on things.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. As we say so often on the show, multiple things can be true, and somebody can have definitely impacted their trajectory in life, particularly I'm talking about in like the job stuff, and also be cognizant of how their privilege, whatever that privilege is, and like for instance, Ijeoma Oluo gets into this in her book. So you want to talk about race, talking about, you know, checking her own privilege, which I have to say I have an instinctive kind of like knee jerk want to push back on that. If someone's like, check your privilege, because to me, it always, my feeling is always like, oh, somebody is trying to say that I don't get to have the opinion I have. So my kind of like the insecure, easily hurt part of me is like, check your privilege. Get out of my face. I don't want to check my privilege because I just want to say my opinion right now. And I don't want to have to like ask myself if there's some other perspective I should be considering. But there's really something to that, which is like, and she checks through her own privilege. I mean, she's a woman of color, but she goes through and she kind of, like you said, she talks about some things that have gone okay for her, and that she, you know, came from a family where she was able to attend, actually go to school. Like she grew up in a house that felt safe, and so, and she had food, and she had, you know what I mean. So it's kind of like, but also Ijeoma deserves a tremendous amount of credit for what she's accomplished in her life. And also, she had a certain amount of privilege. And you know, I would put myself on the same list, except a million times more privilege. And again, I wish I could remember the thing I had read. It wasn't just Ijeoma's book, but there was something else I had read that really tripped this in my mind. And I was going back through my life of being kind of a young, brash person. And all of the, like, in fact, Carrie, when we were this weekend, we were driving around with Carrie's friend who's visiting from out of town. And Carrie said something about like how she asked me to like restate whatever it was I had said when I quit this radio show I had in New York for NPR. And I think I, at one point when I was trying to quit and they were trying to enforce my contract, and I said something to them like, these are the bosses of NPR. I said something like, I'm a radical isotope. You don't want bouncing around the universe angry at you. Which I don't even know if that makes sense on a scientific level. Like, I just said that with a straight face to people who were in charge of the network. I'm not telling this story to be like, haha, funny Luke. I'm like, can you imagine if I was a black woman and I said that? And that's – I'm not saying that this is how it should be. Please understand.
Obviously, yeah.
But it's like – in so that story, I've had that story in my mind and I've told it many times. And it's always been a story of me being kind of like – just like ballsy and giving zero fucks. But we got there. I tried to not use the F word like three previous times in the show. And I just decided randomly to do it there. Like, I don't know. I figured, we're 4 minutes past the river. No one cares. But when you go back and you think about these stories, we all have the stories of our lives and these big moments. And a lot of mine come down to me being plucky or me just speaking truth to power or whatever. But if I think about – if I swap out my like – white, straight maleness for somebody else, a different person, those stories don't end the same way, probably, you know?
Yeah.
I've like literally never thought about that till this summer.
Yeah. And it's something that, and again, I feel, I don't know, because you do read tweets that make you angrier. There are so many people who are just kind of like, I'm on this side, I'm on that side. And I know that I am on the, you know, the snowflakier side of these things. And I definitely feel, I mean, I just, I mean, Veeves and I talk about it all the time. I don't think a day goes by where Vives and I are not, and not like from even some liberal perspective, just like we'll just be having a really nice day. And Genevieve is often the person to say, God, we just are so lucky. We're so lucky. We've been in a relationship for this long. We've had our health. We were born lucky to have, access to resources. And she says that stuff. And it's funny because for us, when we say that, and again, we say that a lot, just to remind ourselves how lucky we are. I mean, we love where we live right now. Life is just great. We love our jobs. And when we privately say that, which we do often, almost like a mantra, it's not that different from my dad, who approaches things like kind of very differently, but almost does the same thing. He always thinks about how blessed he is. Now, if I got into it, and I could be totally wrong, I'm not trying to pillory him here or anything. I think, though, if he and I got into a conversation like this about bootstrapping and essentially
pillory
about
for prison 2017,
I probably used that wrong. But like, if I were to sit down with my dad, I'm guessing here, and again, I'm not casting aspersions, but if I were to sit down with him and try to probably explain white privilege as I see it, because my dad, my dad worked his ass off for a lot of stuff, and he had an interesting path himself. I bet you that if he and I sat down and talked about bootstrapping and white privilege, we wouldn't necessarily see eye to eye on that. However, I grew up in a home where my dad was constantly kind of reminding himself and reminding us how blessed we were. Like, his language for it is about, he's a religious man, and he just thinks about how blessed he is to have the life he has and have the family he has. And then we're over here on the left coast doing the same thing, just using different language, though, essentially, right? And looking at, from a more humanistic standpoint, trying to acknowledge the advantages that Genevieve and I have because of the lot in life that we were given from birth. But essentially, it's the same thing, which is like taking a moment to appreciate what you have and realize that there are bigger forces going on.
And, I mean, in both cases, ideally what would happen is if one is reflecting on what their good fortune, or you could use privilege, has been, then the next thought would be, okay, well, next time I'm not understanding maybe exactly where someone's coming from on a particular topic, maybe I can take a moment to be more understanding because of – in other words, the natural outcome of saying like, God, aren't we lucky to be in this position we're in, is to then also just maybe have a little more empathy for somebody else who's coming at it with a different experience. I mean, that would be the hope.
Yeah.
But I do think that people – and I will completely cop to this, I think that it can be really threatening when we have our own narrative of how we got here and we burned the candle at both ends or whatever. And then to hear that somebody else might have had a really challenging road or a more challenging road, or that – to some degree, my whiteness helped me. It almost feels like someone's saying, well, then, I mean, it can feel in your insecure moments like somebody is saying, well, then nothing you did, you don't deserve to be proud of yourself at all or any of your accomplishments. And of course, that's not what anyone's saying. Like, that's when people are saying, let's just talk about kind of like what we're all dealing with in this life. If somebody says that, it's not them saying you suck or you don't get to be – it's not them saying your dad didn't work hard. It's not them saying I didn't work hard or whatever. It's just saying let's just take a moment. Let's just try to accurately assess kind of what our experience has been. And then we can like with all of the information and all the facts, then maybe we can kind of try to move forward in a way that's as equitable to everybody as possible. But I know for a fact that that can feel very threatening. There was definitely a time in my life where if somebody said to me, well, you were probably helped along the way by the fact that you're a white guy, I would have been furious because it would have felt like somebody was just saying, I walked to the front of the line for radio jobs and I was like, I'm here for my job. And then they handed it to me and I was like, way to go, white privilege. Like, that's right. What it would have sounded like and felt like to me. Someone was saying, of course, that isn't what they would be saying. But anyway.
But just to acknowledge, can I just correct the record on one thing, though, before you totally wrap up? I just want to say I was wrong. I'm really embarrassed about my ability to try to summarize the Twitter conversation, and I got some things wrong. It was not a reporter. It was Gene Balk of the Seattle Times.
Oh, yeah. Of course, he's a columnist. Data cruncher.
Yes, and more of a columnist. And his exact tweet was, and you'll hear, I'm going to read to you his tweet in Brandy's, only not because I think this is a good place to end the segment, but only because I'm a little embarrassed because I don't want to misrepresent these folks. He said, I am told that Dory Monson Show, and he did at Dory Monson. I didn't realize that. I am told that Dory Monson Show spent 10 minutes complaining about my column because I used the word lucky once in passing to describe people who own their homes free and clear because, all caps, everything is earned. There is no good fortune.
Do you need an extra little bit of loving?
Shake my head is what he said. And Brandy's making her point, and she is not coming in here bombastically. She says, hey, Gene Balk, I haven't heard my friend Dory Monson's segment, but certainly both things can be true. There are people who have inherited homes who are indeed, quote, lucky, but there are also those who have pulled themselves up from nothing and have earned everything they have. And then she goes on later on, if they go back and forth respectfully, to kind of talk about her experience. So I don't think she's coming in super hot, she believes that there are those who have pulled themselves up from nothing and earned everything, I think, is where you get into some, like, this idea that, you know, again, if you claim that any doors were opened to me because of this color of my skin or the fact that I don't suffer from mental illness or anything like that.
Or
anything like that. I was born with all of my fingers and toes and all of my limbs or whatever. That you can't acknowledge that as being luck at all because it devalues your own struggle. That kind of binary thinking bothers me. And that's why I brought this up a few weeks ago when this was tweeted out. Let's see, this was back in August 25th. And this was one of those things where it probably reflects me more. It was like I woke up, I read this back and forth, and I was just fuming about this for days. I was having like, because I really like Brandy, but for some reason the idea that people just believe that that luck and fortune and also an amount of privilege it just has nothing to do with this story at all, I really grate at that.
I think for me, I'm just repeating myself, but I honestly think, because, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I worked at KVI, and I was, I guess you would say, libertarian. Like, I really just thought, like, can't everyone just handle their business? Like, everybody just do the right thing, and then the government can get out of our lives or whatever. But I think for me, the biggest change in my way of looking at the world is, and this is a version of what I've already, I guess, just been kind of saying, is, like, nobody is where they're at. No, let me put it this way. No one 100% deserves to be where they're at. And that goes in both directions. Like, you know, Warren Buffett seems like a cool guy. He's obviously been smart and disciplined. He still caught some breaks. There's also somebody who's, like, right now living in a mini Winnie that doesn't run in Seattle. And that person probably made some bad decisions at times. They've probably battled some stuff. And they also don't 100% deserve to be where they are. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and thinking about the world that way, I think, is a much, like, if things are going great, let's not get too carried away with ourselves. And if things are going bad, let's not beat ourselves up too much. Again, there are things Warren Buffett has done that have contributed to him being Warren Buffett. And that person in that mini Winnie, same thing. But this idea that we are all exactly where we should be, that where we are is a reflection of how worthwhile we are as a human, or how much we want it, or, like, that's just bullshit. And I feel like that's, like, the entire political structure in this country is – unfortunately, too much of it is built around that idea that the people who got rich got rich because they were virtuous, and the people who are poor are poor because of a moral failing, you know? And I just think if we could – again, people have a certain amount of responsibility for where they're at. I'm not trying to act like they're – like, you know, personal responsibility plays no role in it, but I just don't think it's nearly as stark as we're kind of led to believe.
Yeah, there's a guy who's at the is telling you, you know, we've talked about on the show on Sundays when I volunteer with this pop-up kitchen for homeless people. And there's a kid, a young kid, the son of another volunteer. I'm going to say he's about 11. I'm going to say he's about 11 years old, around there. And he helps. He's great, great kid. And he helps. And there was a person who was going through the line, you know, getting their food. And I think maybe they actually... whatever. They were getting their food, and they said to him as he was serving them, they said, I have a life lesson for you. Stay away from drugs and alcohol, and that can really be the difference between you being on that side of the table or you being on this side of the table.
Wow. That's intense.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yeah. You'll probably remember
what
that.
Was, Were you able to gauge the kid's reaction?
I kicked the guy out. I said, don't talk to kids. Yeah, there's a sign right here. Don't talk to the children.
Stranger danger. Tommy, are you all right? Here's a little sip of something strong to take the edge off. I know you're probably feeling a little upset. That's
He's a great kid. He's a shy, though. I don't really think you know how it is when an adult puts all their
focus on
you.
It's a lot to process
you.
When you're a little kid.
Of course.
And the interesting thing about that interaction, as you describe it, is that's probably very that adult comes by the information honestly, it would sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to probably pass that on because if someone else cannot have gone through the various things they've gone through, you know what I mean? They're trying to sort of be a cautionary tale. That's also a lot to take in if you're a little kid because you probably haven't thought about the world that way. You probably weren't going to start drinking this week. But but you know what I mean? It's like well-intentioned and a lot to hear.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of like a typical episode of TBTL.
Yeah, I know. How did we get here? Oh, yeah. Children singing.
How do we get out? Yes, that's right.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right, let us that big screen at the Eagles isn't going to set itself up.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Oh, God. Oh,
so
yeah,
should we try to do a should we try to do like an email or two before we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do one at least. Yeah, let's do one.
Okay. Hold on. I got the sound effect.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
By the way, the construction site in Ipswich apologized for the scary child song, and they said they will turn the speakers down and they will also redirect the little sensors, which were too sensitive, and that's why spiders walking across them activated it.
Or it could be that they were actually very giant spiders, and this town will also be in top stories next week when we discover that Ipswich
has... Welcome to Starship Troopers 2.
Hey, before we get into the actual emails and V-mails, do you mind if I remind people to get Mariners tickets? We are doing the Mariners TBTL meetup on September 26th. That's a Wednesday. Game starts at 7, and we'll all be there. You can go to mariners.com/TBTL to get the special price tickets, and of course you get that that T-shirt that we designed for it as well.
Did you see the update?
Yes, that's what made me think of it. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, you had mentioned to me that we'd had at least one listener ask about access and accessibility for this event because, gets a little – sometimes can be funky in the stadium if it's ADA compliant. And we asked the Mariners and they said, yes, we have ADA seats through the TBTL offer. Folks can go online through the webpage if they want to look for row 5A. We've got some seats there in section 337, or they can reach out directly to the Mariners, to our contact there, if any special arrangements need to be made. So if you
reach out to me.
Andrew,
yeah.
And then Andrew will reach out to Elizabeth at the Mariners and get it worked out. But if you want to come to the game on the 26th, it's Wednesday night, Oakland A's, and if there's any kind of accessibility questions that you have, if you can figure it out through the website, which is mariners.com/TBTL, you can do it there, or you can hit Andrew up and we can get it figured out.
Yeah, definitely. But we do have seating available, so that's really important. And thanks for the person who brought that to our attention. Now, here's the deal. I mean, I got some great emails here. And I also have a voicemail from our friend the Stewbot, which is probably the most unhinged voicemail we've gotten from the Stewbot yet.
Was it moments after Green Bay Packers and Minnesota Vikings played to a 29-29 tie? You know that score has never occurred in an NFL game.
Really? Yeah, that is a weird. I didn't know it was 29.
Like as a final
29,
score,
that's
like
a weird
it makes
number.
No sense. It was like when I worked at Dick's Drive-In and the cash registers didn't do the math for us. We had to add up the prices of all of the items in our mind and then tell the customer, and I could never do it. So I just make up a price. And every once in a while, I would make up a price that was an irrational number, and my manager would go like, what? Like, my manager would hear me go like 874, and they'd be like, nope.
How
no combination of items at this Dick's add up to 874. Like 29.29 in the NFL is that of prices.
Right, right. No, this he sent last week after I think we were thanking the donors of the day, and you got into a little, I don't know if it was a conversation or a monologue about Eden Prairie versus
Converlog.
Converlog Edina. Is it Edina or Edina?
I think mentioned Edina. That there was I think it's Edina.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I had mentioned an NFL referee lived, I think, in Edina, Minnesota, which is not Eden Prairie. And I,
right.
But for some reason, that made me think of it. I believe that was what I was talking about.
Now, of course, this was a conversation about the geography of Minnesota. So we got this voicemail from the Stewbot. Buckle up.
Hey, dinguses. It's Stu from Internet. I'm calling about the issue you raised on Thursday's show about the differences between Edina and Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Edina is like the OG affluent white suburb of Minneapolis. You probably know it best. It's the hometown of the Hold Steady's Craig Finn. He name checks it a lot in his lyrics.
I had to listen to that part of the voicemail a bunch of times to understand what he was saying. That did you understand that? This the
I did.
Lead singer
Craig
of the
Finn,
Hold Steady. Is from there. Yeah. So okay, that's probably just my ears. I just want to make sure everybody is following along here. So let me go back.
A lot in his lyrics. Their second album, Separation Sunday, the song Hornets. The Hornets are the Edina High School mascot.
Oh, I never knew that. I think I skipped that Hornets song.
Album.
I listened to that. I used to listen to that album a lot, but I think I would skip the Hornets one.
Hmm.
High school mascot. They're very derisively called cake eaters by us common folk. I should also note that the Hold Steady will be playing at Surly Brewing Company on Saturday, October 13th.
Oh, I see where this is going. Got it. Okay.
You just do a little.
This is.
Trust me. She said that the first night that she met.
This is not my favorite. This is not my favorite intro to any of these songs. I think. I just want to hear the beginning of the music.
There's gonna come a time when I'm gonna have to go with whoever's gonna get me the highest.
All right, that's Hornets. Hornets. That is the song I always skip.
Okay.
I see, and I didn't even realize the backstory. All right, sorry, keep going.
Okay, so here's back to Stu's voicemail.
Eden Prairie, it's also very affluent, but it's a little farther away from Minneapolis. It's southwest of the city. It's best known as the longtime home of the Minnesota Vikings practice facility, and it's also home of the Eden Prairie Center. It's a mall. It's where I bought a Spuds McKenzie t-shirt in 1986, and
super
where
party
Kevin
animal.
Smith filmed Mallrats. And I think that's about it. Man, breaking news. I guess we'll just start welcoming my special guest, Adam Duritz, lead singer of the Counting Crows, is here for this phone call. Adam, welcome to the phone call.
What's up?
Adam, I just want to say you seem really agitated. Can I ask how you're feeling?
Nervous!
I get that. You know, calling the voicemail line of the daily public media podcast can overwhelm at times. You know, what I do is I picture like a constant, a reference point that really steadies my nerves. Like, you know, let's say an HBO original series featuring the actor and comedian Robert Wool.
Arliss!
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, I'd love to chat longer, but this call's getting pretty long. I got to get back to work. You okay if we just leave it here, Adam?
Yeah!
All right. Later, taters.
So I guess that was a pretty big get for Stu and us by way of Stu.
My question is, does he feel like Arliss is one of the things that he can sing most effectively?
I don't know.
The The Arliss reference is really left field. That show, maybe I need to go back and give Arliss another day in court. I never got that show. I never got the popularity of it. Again, I didn't. I was young, and maybe it was just like a dry sense, like a dry sensibility that was lost on me. I felt like Arliss was always on HBO, and I never, like, you just never hear the words Robert Wool vehicle.
Right.
Like, and there's a reason right. for that.
This is the first I'm even hearing of it. I don't know Arliss at all. So a lot of this voicemail was really lost on me. Let's see. Arliss is an American sitcom about a sports agent that premiered in 1996 and ended
in
2002.
I believe the S in Arliss was like a dollar sign.
Yes, it was.
Doing with that.
Yep. Okay. So that's why. Yeah, this would be a very... This is a black hole for me as far as premium television. I definitely was not messing
with
HBO.
I just think it's funny that Arliss came up. Like, he must feel – Stu from Internet must have felt
– Yeah.
Must feel like the word Arliss lends it to a kind of a Adam – the plaintive cry of an Adam Duritz.
Yeah.
As he performs it. Also, add this to the list of Eden Prairie notables. Bernie Kukar, American former football official in the NFL for 22 seasons.
Oh.
That's who I was thinking of. So not Edina. Take Edina off the list. It was Eden Prairie. That was where Bernie Kukar, I once interviewed in an article or for a radio piece. Bernie Kukar was from Eden Prairie.
Do you think Bernie Kukar and Bernie Kosar ever get together and talk football?
I know they've gone in on a few small business projects that have not ended well.
Yeah, I believe that. Okay, well, that's our email segment for today.
Problem is, now I'm thinking, like, God, do we go out with a Counting Crows song?
Yeah. That's so much better than whatever I was squeaking out there. We could do that.
I had promised I wanted to go out with Bonnie Doone.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Because I've been digging on
music for your weekend. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to talk you off it. I don't know Bonnie Doone, yeah.
Let's do this. Let's do Long Wave by Bonnie Doone.
Long Wave. I'll look that up here. In the meantime, I'm going to forget that while I read these to you. Here's where show titles I had.
Okay.
DFTB in the BSBC, which isn't something you ever said. I think I just wrote that down because I thought it was funny. And then, oh, I guess all I have is Large Adult Dinguses. That's the only thing I wrote
down. I have Luke Burbank Poop Detective. Luke Burbank Poop Detector?
Detective is definitely what I said. Do you want poop in the title? How do you think that flies back there in Minnesota?
Oh, I think it's probably fine.
Okay, Luke Burbank, poop detective. You stand by this?
I stand by it. I mean, it sounds like you're nervous, though.
Well, the thing is, what I learned today is that
you have trouble titling podcasts when you're nervous.
Oh yeah,
that's
what is
another
that?
Duritz. That's from around here.
Oh, okay. All right. See, I didn't get all of that. It was just a little bit over my head. But, you know, I'm trying to be more bold. I'm trying to be that guy who, you know, takes his friends to work to watch HBO games.
Yes.
Or games.
Tonight, when you're watching the game, ask Camaro Kev who that was. My memory is that it was Bernard the Alien, a.k.a. the Executioner Hopkins. I can't remember. Maybe Sugar Shane Mosley. I don't know. Ask him who that fight was. He'll know immediately because he's got an encyclopedic mind for that stuff.
Well, you have time if you just want to head down to the Eagles yourself here.
Don't tempt me. I got a lot of excitement, anticipation, and dread surrounding tonight's game. I'm not going to say that reading that Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright are both out made me feel better.
Yeah.
Between Khalil Mack, this is – Sorry, and then we got to go, obviously. But this will just be funny, I guess, for someone to listen to tomorrow because, like, right now, you and I, the Seahawks are about to play the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football, and I don't know the future. I don't know what's going to happen. I know that this doesn't feel really – it's not inspiring confidence in me when apparently the silver lining of Jermaine Effetti trying to block Khalil Mack as opposed to how can I forget his name already?
Oh,
Von Miller,
yeah.
from the Broncos. Apparently, because Von Miller he literally openly mocked Jermaine Effetti and his chances of covering him or of blocking him, and he was 100% right. But here's what they're saying is good news about now Jermaine Effetti trying to block Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack is more of a power rusher, and I guess Jermaine Effetti is mildly stronger than he looks. Whereas Von Miller is like a speed rusher. So as long as Khalil Mack is just pushing Jermaine Ifedi with a tremendous amount of force, that bodes better for us than Von Miller just running around Jermaine Ifedi.
Doing
that
a just swim seems like the move coldest, or whatever he's famous
yeah,
for.
Yeah, that is the coldest comfort I've ever heard.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That does not make me feel like Jermaine Ifedi. What's the over-under on false starts from Jermaine Ifedi tonight? Let's do this. Let's do a little prognosticating. I'm going to say three. I think three is a good number. You can take the over or under on how many false starts Jermaine Ifedi will have tonight, trying to guard Khalil Mack.
Well, I think I'm going to take
really
the
guard,
under.
It's push back Khalil Mack.
Right. Stop. I'm going to take the under because I think he only had one in the last game. Am I right
really?
About that, though?
Oh, look at you. It felt like 90 to me, but that's,
pretty faded but after that Browns game last week, and I don't know. Maybe I wasn't
It might have only
attention.
Been one. I think it's like one inopportune Jermaine Ifedi false start feels to me like 100. So I don't have an accurate assessment of what is. Okay, so you're going to take the under. I mean, three is a pretty high number. I'm going to take – I guess I got to take the over or the under. I mean, if he got to three false starts, they'd probably pull him. So I guess I'll take the under as well. But
okay.
I don't know. I'm not going into this with a ton of hope, because I just feel like after that loss that the Bears took to the Packers and the way they did, and now they're playing at home, and we're like, you know, Earl Thomas is like play like even though he's working out nine times a day at home like a Mark Wahlberg in the middle of the night. I still like think it's a lot for him to come and like play back to back weeks in NFL games without training camp. And then we don't have our linebackers in the middle. And then it's like Baldwin's out. Just this feels like a dangerous situation for us. And yet I am so flippin' excited to watch the game.
Yeah. This is going to be if we win this, it'll be really something. But, if we're going to be talking about sports right now, I got through this whole show without once referencing the abomination of what happened in New Orleans against the Browns yesterday.
Sorry. I didn't even like.
Oh, my God. We'll talk about that.
I didn't even know how
tomorrow.
To talk about it on
Cleveland. This is for you.
I didn't even know how to talk about it on text message with you yesterday. Like, I was just kind of like,
I appreciate
nothing
that.
I say here, like, no funny quip. No, nothing's going to put it in perspective, and nothing's going to make it hurt less. Like, I just knew this was not the time for jokes.
Yes. When something like this happens to somebody, it's really hard to know how to kind of reach
like,
out.
I was, streaming that at my house on Reddit, like, and just dying a thousand deaths with you, although not nearly as badly as you were dying, but I was still dying watching that. And then I was like, I wanted to say something comforting, but I just didn't think I could think of anything, and I didn't want you to think I was making light of it.
No. I'm not going to get into it now. We will talk about this in No Point Conversion tomorrow when we talk about tonight's game and Sunday's Browns game. But for those who are listening and are casually interested in this, yes, the Browns lost again yesterday, but they lost in a way. And I know I've said this on the show. You could make a record, or I sound like a broken record. They continue to find new, just amazing ways to lose. I mean, this was incredible. So stay tuned for that tomorrow. We will discuss.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
I mean, in new just, ways.
I mean, just really... Well, if it's any consolation, I think half of the kickers in the NFL got fired this morning.
Which is also a problem like, because everybody's going after the same, you know, you have a supply and
demand
problem.
Did you like to see, you obviously saw who one of the people bucking to replace Zane Gonzalez is, right?
Yeah. But then they didn't go with him, Blair Walsh. Anyway, okay, enough. We'll say it for, no, they picked up somebody who was on, I want to say the Dolphins.
You are handsome. Don't worry. It's just a game.
Oh my God.
Alright
okay, so what's the song again? I told you I'd forget it.
It's Bonnie Doon, and it's called Long Wave.
Okay.
Bonnie Doon is spelled B-O-N-N-Y D-O-O-N. Addie told me that she was like, she just moved to a new city, and she's kind of just getting reacquainted or acquainted with the city and making new friends, and she said, when I'm emotionally fragile, I don't need to listen to music that like makes me question everything. So she liked this song, Long Wave, because it just basically says like, hey, you know what? Wherever you are, that's where you should be at.
Nice.
And so I was like, oh, that's a good thing to think about. I'm going to apply that to my life. And anyway, this whole album, Long Wave, is so good. So take a listen to this. And enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, go Seahawks, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.